Radio.
Should Speech Be Free? An interview with Dr. Renee Kohler-Ryan from the University of Notre Dame, Australia. So I'm joined today by Dr. Renee Kohler-Ryan. Thank you for joining me, Renee.
You're very welcome.
So, of course, we've seen recently the horrendous events that have happened in France concerning Charlie Hebdo, the terrorism attacks that have happened there. But in the aftermath of that, we've also seen this discussion about free speech. I first of all wanted to ask you, what is freedom of speech and where did it come from?
I think that it's interesting when we're looking at freedom of speech with the whole Charlie Hebdo case, because there's a certain emphasis on freedom of speech within France, which may be a little bit different in other countries of the Western world. So I suppose if I just go back a little bit and then I'll work my way back to France as I understand it. I'm no expert in matters of all things French by any means. But if you look back as far as Aristotle thought that a person is truly free if they can speak and act in the public domain. He had in mind being able to speak and act well in the public domain, so that's an interesting thing right there. Freedom of speech, though, for Aristotle, was actually quite restricted in some ways, because the only people who had that kind of freedom of speech were those who were propertied. They were men of a certain age. They were not slaves. They were not women, and they were not children. So already you see that there was some kind of restriction going on there. In the 20th century, there's a different context, and that's the Declaration of Human Rights. So that's where really our understanding post-World War II comes from, that freedom of speech is absolutely essential to living a good life, to being protected, and to it's just seen as a basic freedom. So I think that that's another context that's the one that we as English speakers are probably most familiar with. But there's another layer going on, as I understand it, within France, and that's what they call the layer of laïcité, if you want to put it in the French, or secularisation. So this emphasis on the secular state has taken on a particular kind of form, which seems to be that anyone can say anything that they want, and that certainly any kind of speech acts about religious matters are certainly not out of bounds. So that's where this very strong response is coming out of in France, I think, with secularisation, which really goes back to the French Revolution, which was very, very anti-religious and wanted to, they were looking for a refounding of everything, including an understanding of what the human person is for. And that was supposed to take away, if you want, the transcendent horizon of religion.
Mm. What's the point of free speech, though, I guess would be my next question. I mean, we can often think that the opposite of free speech is horrible, that is, that no one except for a select few people are allowed to speak and everyone else cannot. But there's grey areas between that. Why is free speech a good thing? What is it for, exactly?
Free speech is for communication. So it's for being able to say the things that are most important in life and being able to figure out together how it is that we can negotiate those things for each other. So if you just think of someone who cannot speak, it's not just that there's a kind of pressure release that is not being enabled. I do think that's part of it. If someone can't speak, if they can't communicate, there's this certain sense of isolation, and there's a real sense that they're not being understood, and therefore their freedom for action is actually being compromised in some way. So basically, when you're talking about freedom of speech, you are referring to something that's really fundamental to being a human person. Actually, to go back to Aristotle again, Aristotle basically says we know that we are political because we speak. So other animals make sounds and all this kind of thing, but they don't have the capacity to have freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is the freedom to work with concepts, but it's also the freedom to work with concepts with other people and to work with concepts in ways that can change lives. So that would be sort of the top level freedom of speech that we're looking at. We think it's very rude to tell someone to shut up. And if you don't have freedom of speech, you're basically saying that you're telling certain people to shut up because what they have to say does not matter and should not, and even worse, should not be said. And there's something that is, you know, it's not just that it's rude. The fact is that it's wrong, because people should be able to say what it is that they think. This, of course, brings up all sorts of other issues. Mm. You know, mm. are there things that are off limits? But you might be about to ask me something about that, I suppose. But, you know, are there sort of things that are off limits or not? And this is what I think the conversation coming out of the horrible events in Paris are leading to, conversations in that order.
We did preempt my question there. I guess I have seen also this term, this right to offend.
Yeah.
Now, you said that before that free speech is about communication. However, if the purpose of that communication is to offend someone, does that change, I guess, the colouring of that freedom of speech there? Does it suddenly move away from freedom of speech? Or should that be encapsulated within the concept that we know as freedom of speech?
In Australia, we've been having a conversation about this for a little while now, so probably since 2011, when Andrew Bolt was taken to court over some pretty incendiary articles about 9 Indigenous Australians who he was accusing of basically using the race card, which is a horrible thing to say anyway, to get ahead in life. Whereas others, you know, were not able to do the same thing. And his claim was, you look white, you've had all the advantages of a white person, why are you doing this? And they took offence, and he was taken to court over this. So this is 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act. When Abbott came in, one of the things that he said that he was going to do was to modify that Racial Discrimination Act. And there was a really interesting conversation taking place then, where you would have people of the Jewish faith, from Islam and also from Christianity, and you know, when Brandis was trying to say we absolutely need to make these changes to the Act, which I'll talk about in just a moment, because then we'll have a more robust conversation about what really matters. All of these religious leaders were saying, no, it's robust enough, thank you very much. And if you take away these, you know, what's instituted there in the law, we will actually have quite some difficulties, and, you know, hate speech would basically be legal, and we don't want hate speech to be legal. So what Brandis wanted to do, sort of on behalf of Abbott, it seems, was to take away anything that would say that because what you have said has hurt my feelings, I can take you to court. And he just said, you can't legislate about hurt feelings. But there's been a whole discussion about, you know, what it is to give offence, what it is to take offence, what it is to humiliate, and especially what it is to vilify. So to vilify, to cause someone to hate someone else. It does seem that it is probably a good idea within a democratic society to say that vilification is never right, because otherwise we're not protecting certain citizens. From all of that offence and humiliation, I can see that that's a little bit more difficult to legislate about. But then if you take it over to what's happening in the Hebdo situation, these cartoonists are deliberately offending, it does seem, Islam, Christianity and Judaism. So as far as I can see in the or what I read very briefly about, you know, they did the there were the horrible events. 8 days later, they came out with, I think, 3 million copies and had to do another print run of another Charlie Hebdo, and the Prophet Muhammad was on the cover again. Well, apparently within that edition, Judaism and Christianity, I think the Pope, were also made fun of.
Yep.
We don't go out there with guns to kill people who offend us in Judaism and Christianity. But somehow in Islam, because there's this whole understanding of the image and of the importance of the image in a different way, they were immediately going to take offence and going to take radical offence. I may be offended by what's going on in Charlie Hebdo when they're saying something about the Pope, but the first thing that comes to mind isn't they've got to die. The first thing that comes to mind is not jihad. The first thing that comes to mind, I suppose, is something like, well, you know, it would be really good if we could have a conversation about this, because I am offended by it, but maybe if they could see from another perspective what's going on, okay. The opportunity to have that conversation relies upon the person who is giving the offence being able to take on board that that might not be such a good thing to do, and why that is. But if the freedom of expression weren't there at all, how would I know? See, this is where it becomes quite interesting. How would I know what the other person is thinking if they're thinking to themselves, I'm not allowed to say it because it might offend? Maybe there's a little bit of a grey area there where people need to offend a little bit in order to be able to see that they're not quite at the right stage of understanding.
Do you think, though, that there's a bit of a difference between, say, an example that I saw that was almost given in the same category, not necessarily, but in the same category as what Charlie Hebdo did, was, say, for example, Dante in the Inferno depicting Muhammad tearing himself in half.
Yeah.
He's, of course, it's not an image because it's a poem, but the nonetheless, there's still the opportunity there for offence. However, I don't think Dante would have been considering when writing that. I'm not him, so I don't know. But he wasn't necessarily doing that as a vilification, as you say, or as an attempt at offence, but rather, I guess it was a commentary on what he thought about the Prophet Muhammad and Ali and the religion that is Islam. And what he saw as being evil. On the other hand, when you see Charlie Hebdo, it almost seems like when you look at the history there, it's really simply there as an opportunity to offend. Do you think that we need to be able to see the distinction between those two there, between something that might be attempting to contribute to a conversation in which there's that opportunity, as you say, for someone to say, well, no, that's not right, you shouldn't say that, and then have a conversation about that, and then I guess I can only describe it as Charlie Hebdo, what they're doing. Should we be able to cut those lines between those two there, or should they be in the same category?
Well, I suppose Charlie Hebdo, they claim that they're satirists. And the point of satire is to be able, as I see it, is to be able to see that there's some truth in what is being said. And because there's that little bit of truth there, it makes the humour in it a bit more biting, and it should also enable you to see something about the truth that is there. So it's like the, you know, satire bringing you to the point of being able to laugh, but it's a bit of a cynical laugh, really. So I mean, I think that that's what they're trying to do at Charlie Hebdo. I found it chilling and at the same time really fascinating that when the guys came in there with their guns, they thought it was a joke. They thought someone was pulling a prank on them, and then they realised that, of course, it wasn't. But that's the kind of level of satire or humour that we're talking about here. It's quite raw, and it's quite confrontational. So, you know, they could always, it seems like they thought, oh yeah, a friend could be having a good joke on them. The difference between that and what Dante is doing, Dante is, of course, interesting because he's trying to see how it is, so it's with his medieval, what we call anagogical vision. So he's trying to say, look, everything that happened on Earth, this is the consequence. And let me show you in some kind of symbolic form what it means that what Muhammad did on Earth, what it means in the whole scheme of eternity. That's a different kind of commentary happening. It's kind of him placing Muhammad in conversation with everyone else who is now understanding their lives in terms of heaven, hell, and purgatory.
I guess my one of the last things that I want to ask you about is concerning the conversation that has been happening afterwards. And that is that what I've seen a lot of the reaction to people saying, well, I don't necessarily agree with what Charlie Hebdo has been publishing, is this kind of false choice that you either approve of what Charlie Hebdo are doing and say that they shouldn't have been killed, of course, or if you deny that, that you're saying that they shouldn't be allowed to do it, and if they do do it, then what happened to them is okay. That, I guess, a disapproval of their speech is an approval of what's happened to them. Is that a false choice, firstly? And secondly, how do we... You can see that there's different rights clashing up against each other at that point there. I guess we do have a right in our society to not be vilified, in a sense. I'm not sure if it would be articulated like that. But at the same time, you also have the right to free speech, and they clash up against each other. Can you speak a little bit about that, about the interaction of rights happening there?
Sure. So to go back to your first question there, is it a false choice? I think there was a lot of pressure on people, particularly within the performing arts, I noticed, but also within media, to immediately take up the catchphrase, "Je suis Charlie." Mm. So you saw that everywhere. And it was this act of solidarity. And, you know, you had, what was it, 40 world leaders coming together to Paris with Obama noticeably missing. So that's been a nice, an interesting kind of diplomacy issue to watch from afar. And you had, you know, I read between 1 million and 2 million people on the street, and they were holding up cards saying, "Je suis Charlie." The journalists, including the cartoonists and the editor who were killed, have been made martyrs for free speech. You have seen, you know, I saw a quote from the editor who said, "I'd rather die standing than die standing than be forced onto my knees." So this was one of the things. There was also the tweet just after it happened from the Charlie Hebdo survivors. Was the, you know, Voltaire is said to have said this, but he did not. Mm, he said, yeah. He is said to have said that, "I may not agree with what you say, but I'll fight to the death for your right to say it." And that's a very interesting, you know, it was a biographer who was paraphrasing him and all of this kind of thing. So that was interesting that they called upon that as well. So this idea that free speech is something so fundamental that if you don't have it, you might as well die. Do we have to go along with that? Or I think that probably a more moderated view was put forth by Pope Francis. I don't know if you've seen the footage of him. It was quite fun in its own way.
Expecting a punch.
Yeah, yes. That's right. Where he was saying, look, it's not okay to offend. There have to be some kinds of limitations. And he said, don't get me wrong, it is never right to go out and kill someone. But in another way, it's not right to... So on another level, it's not right to go out and to offend someone. So he had his friend next to him and he said, look, if he says something bad about my mother, let's face it, he's going to get a punch. And he sort of gave him a false punch. You know, this sort of gentle way that Francis has of reminding us that we do need to be careful, and to be, I suppose the Christian message in this would be, to be quite loving. To love someone doesn't mean that you shouldn't face them with the reality of truth if they're doing something wrong, or, you know, but it doesn't mean at the same time, in a kind of sense of fraternal correction, that you have to offend them in order to try to force them to see themselves in a different way.
Is that the way forward here then? That is meant to be how carrying this forward, continuing a conversation, I guess, that's the appropriate way?
It would be appropriate to have the freedom to carry out a conversation about free speech, for sure. But I think some of the questions you've been asking me, what is freedom of speech for? That's the level of conversation that we have to be having. Mm. What is freedom of speech for? Some people would like to say freedom of speech is so important that there should be no limitations. A more moderated discussion probably needs to take place. The danger in all of this is that because of the Charlie Hebdo situation, people will take that as carte blanche, if I can use some more French, to say, now I can say whatever. Because, you know, the world has said that I can say whatever I want to say and it's okay. And anyone who says that it's not okay might as well be holding the gun in the Charlie Hebdo office on that day. That's very dangerous. I think that a more moderate and better approach would be to say, what's freedom of speech for? What is it supposed to enable? And if we're using it in the wrong way, then what is it actually disabling? And if it's disabling, then we need to be looking at, you know, how that is the case too. The real problem will be this: if the Charlie Hebdo situation actually ends up shutting some people up, instead of, because they'll become afraid in all sorts of different ways. They'll be afraid to say the unspeakable now, it seems, which is that there should be some conversation about certain limits to free speech. That will be the unsayable now. And that's something we need to be very, very careful about.
Well, thank you very much for joining me, Renee.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, hopefully this conversation will continue. I'm not saying between us. I don't mean to keep you longer.
You can,
I don't mean to keep you longer. But just in the wider community about what free speech is, because I think it is good to be able to see why do we have rights. We can often call upon them, but if we don't have any understanding of what they're for, well then what is the point of having them in the first place? Yeah. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was an interview with Dr. Renee Kohler-Ryan. And for more interviews, talks and shows, visit cradio.org.au.